tonight's talk is about wise speech. And I need to start out by saying that by speech, I mean communication of all sorts, whether it's me talking or anybody sending emails or letters on paper or texts or ASL, facial expressions, body language, and of course, whatever it is people do on social media. Wise speech is a key part of both the Eightfold Path and the precepts. It's the third part of the Eightfold Path, where it begins the section on ethics. The entire Eightfold Path guides us to where we can drop the mental habits that cause our lives to be pervaded with suffering. Buddhist practice leads us to study how our mental activity causes our suffering. The intention is not to blame ourselves or change our thinking through our willpower, but really growing into deeply understanding the cause and effect of dukkha. Our job is to experience our dukkha each time it arises, or as often as we can. Understanding more and more deeply that the cause of this suffering, the suffering I'm having right now, the cause is clinging in the form of either craving or aversion. We closely study the causation of dukkha so that we can feel the burn of our clinging to this hot coal that causes suffering. Then, not through our willpower or our intellect, but through the innate desire of our entire being to be free of suffering, then we will eventually let go of that burning coal of craving or aversion. Now, that might sound like fire and brimstone, but here's the reason why it doesn't need to be. Kindness. The intention to end suffering is also called simply kindness. It is the cornerstone of our practice, the reason for it. And we need to constantly bear that in mind. So apply kindness first and foremost to yourself. This suffering lab specimen that you're studying. Kindness is the foundation of Buddhist ethics. So many of us balk at the thought of being kind to ourselves, thinking it's selfish, like we should only be kind to others. But if we weren't to be kind to ourselves, why do we practice? The way our minds work requires that we put on this oxygen mask of kindness first to help ourselves, then, of course, we will be able and want to apply it to all other beings. There is a sutta called Instructions to Rahula, which is the Buddha's son, at Mango Stone. The Buddha tells his young son, whenever you want to do a verbal action, you should reflect on it. This verbal action I want to do, would it lead to self-affliction, to the affliction of others, or to both? If, on reflection, you know that it would, then any verbal action of that sort is absolutely unfit for you to do. But if on reflection you know that it would not cause affliction, it would be a skillful verbal action with pleasant consequences, pleasant results, then any verbal action of that sort is fit for you to do. Now, if you've ever tried to practice with wise speech, you probably see some problems with this approach. I mean, it's absolutely correct, but most of our communication happens in such a rush that it's not very likely that we can think through all of this. Also, how do we know in advance if what we're about to communicate will cause affliction or have pleasant consequences? Well, experience helps, you know. I've got 70 plus years and I've learned a thing or two, but I still often find that no matter how careful I am, people can still misunderstand what I've said. Maybe their minds fuzzed out key parts of what I said, like the word not in a sentence. That can cause some problems. We can't control the sloppy listening of others. But at least when we're led by goodwill, we can count on having a clear conscience. With all the parts on ethics, it's about the intention to be kind, not to harm. And that intention is the second part of the Eightfold Path. And the first is just to understand that our goal should be to end suffering of ourselves and others. So this intention to be kind, it's great to have, to cultivate it, but it also helps to have some guidelines to follow. The Vaka Sutta says, a statement endowed with five factors is well spoken and blameless. Which five? It is spoken at the right time. It is spoken in truth, politely, beneficially, and with a mind of goodwill. Various suttas offer other guidelines, like avoiding discourse that's divisive among groups. That actually comes up quite a bit. I like to teach the four tests that I was taught that are stated in a positive language. Our communications are less likely to cause suffering if, one, they're truthful, two, they're kind. And that means coming from an intention, not to harm. And three, that they're helpful. And four, they're appropriate. Truth, obviously, is a big one. It's essential for seeing things as they truly are. Gil Fronsdal says, truthfulness is mindfulness out loud. But how do we know? How do we really know what's true? Maybe someone we trust said it, or there's evidence supporting it, or we're taking it on faith. Maybe we really just believed it for so long that it seems to us like unassailable truth. So, however we got some bit of information, how do we communicate it and guard truthfulness? Well, in the Chanki Sutta, we're told basically to state our sources, like good journalists, lawyers, scholars, or Dharma teachers. We say, I read in, say, the New Yorker that XYZ, or I've always thought XYZ. When I was preparing for law school, I thought this insistence on citing sources of my statements would weaken my assertions, especially if the source was a bit squishy. But I realized when I developed this practice that it gave what I said a solidity, a trustworthiness. And that offers safety to everyone involved. Another part of the discipline is to just not say something if we don't know where we got that fact. We definitely don't want to say something if we know it's not true. Truth is what we say when we're committed to being rigorously honest. It's a habit we can develop. Honesty is an attitude, a frame of mind, an approach to the way we see and interact with the world. It becomes a habit when we understand how damaging it is to forsake the truth. In one of Rick Hansen's regular emails, he said, truth is bedrock. Even if you wish the truth were different, it's what you can count on in a world full of selling, spin, and BS. It's your refuge. Without this refuge of honesty, we lose our grip on reality itself. A lie betrays the truth of what is. And the goal of meditation is to know the truth of what is. So every time we deliberately speak what we know is untrue, we unravel our mindfulness. I'm not overstating this. our ability to cope in this world depends on our knowing and adhering to what's true. We protect ourselves and all who receive our communications by observing rigorous honesty in our speech. To do otherwise is foolish and unkind. Now, whether it's cash register honesty or communicating truthfully, being scrupulously honest protects ourselves and those who receive our communications from living in samsara, a world of delusion that is rife with suffering. Well, almost every student eventually asks me, what about white lies? They're also known as social fibbing. Well, ask yourself why you want to say something other than what you really believe to be true. Fear of social consequences is a big reason. We think speaking truth might make someone angry or hurt their feelings. In a Dharma talk, Gil Fronsdal gave a hypothetical example of a bride before her wedding who asks you if you like her dress, and you happen to think it's hideous. Gil suggests you might say, oh, you look lovely in it. And she probably does look lovely, even despite the fact that she's in that dress. I've officiated at quite a few weddings, and I've seen a lot of dresses I would never buy. But I've always felt fine simply telling the bride she looks radiant, because they all have, no matter what they're wearing, and so have the grooms. To avoid being brutally honest, we can look for ways to speak the truth kindly without saying something that seems untrue to us. And we can always just say as little as possible, maybe just an ambiguous smile, a shrug or a nod. Gossip, obviously, is harmful, not just to the individual it's about, but to all who hear and speak it. If it weren't unkind, we wouldn't call it gossip. It would just be information. When we find ourselves in a group that's gossiping, we don't need to take part. I mean, really. I tend to stay silent or wander away. But how do we know what's gossip and what's needed information about someone? Cultivate an intention of kindness and check your feelings, your motivations, before talking about someone who's not there. Mentally double check if saying this really will be helpful to anyone. Who would it help? Would it strengthen or damage a group's cohesion or the person being discussed? Are you sure this is the right audience to have this information? If this conversation is happening in the workplace, there may be protocols for informing or tattling on someone. Ask yourself how you would feel if the person you're talking about overheard what you say. Chris Clifford, a teacher at IMC in Redwood City, tells a story of someone who asked a group gossiping about the habits of an absent man. I wonder why he does that. And that took the negative energy right out of the group's chatter. I think the best way to know if our words are motivated by kindness or a desire to help is to be in touch with the physical feelings of our emotions. Kindness for most of us has an expansive, positive feeling, almost pleasurable. In fact, it's pleasurable. If our words are coming from our own ego needs or from animosity, we're probably feeling tense, burning, or jagged sensations. I've given many talks on how to practice physically feeling our emotions, so you're welcome to go to my website and check in with a few. Many teachings about wise speech deal with idle talk. All societies have their ways of greeting people. I knew ahead of time what the usual greeting was in Thailand, but I was still thrown when the first person asked me if I had eaten. The truth of the matter was I skipped lunch. But in Thailand, that's like our asking each other how you are. We have no special desire to know the details. It's just a way to express goodwill, a quick bonding exchange. But imagine a long conversation at that level. It could be exhausting. Small talk also encourages gossip or harsh speech. It's like email or social media, often prone to trivial words that can easily stray from kindness. So let's refer back to my favorite criteria for wise speech. It's 1, truthful. 2, motivated by kindness. 3, helpful. And 4, appropriate. Harsh speech obviously isn't kind or helpful, even if it is true, then it's almost never appropriate. It may feel good for a quick moment to vent or criticize someone, but it most likely feels unpleasant to the recipient. Even when I know someone's harsh words are due to misunderstanding, it's upsetting to have them aimed at me. It's hard not to retaliate at the same level as the speakers. Tone of voice or facial expressions are a powerful form of communication, even when we unintentionally display them. They can convey ill will and become the entire content of what listeners hear. Knowing when to say something is also important. This is part of the guideline that wise speech be appropriate. There are times when we know our listeners are not going to receive it well. They might be emotional or distracted or not able to understand what you say. The Buddha's advice, when you know your listeners can't take in your words, is to remain silent. Besides what we say, there are other very important kinds of speech. A major one is listening. Honoring others with our attention as they reveal themselves and share information with us. If we spend the time when others are talking, just letting unrelated thoughts swirl through our heads, we may never absorb what they're trying to communicate. Just FYI, I keep giving plugs to my old Dharma talks because there are so many of them, but I gave a talk called Wise Listening and Then... in April of 2017. We also need to listen to our internal speech. It can torment us without our realizing it. We can criticize ourselves harshly for innocent or trivial mistakes. I've heard people say, if anyone else talked to me the way I talk to myself, I'd never speak to them again. We need to use wise speech with ourselves. We are not fair game just because no one else can hear what we're saying. If we practice really listening to ourselves as well as to others, we'll learn a lot that will make our lives better. The practice of wise speech will continue for the rest of our lives. It's not something we completely learn from a Dharma talk or a retreat or from practice exercises like I offered in my course on the Eightfold Path, which you can find on the homepage of RebeccaDixon.org. I think that's my last commercial. We will probably never get perfect at wise speech, even if we decide to quit communicating altogether. We'll still have those facial expressions and body language. But if we cultivate honesty, kindness, and attention to what's going on with the others and ourselves, our speech will be as wise as possible. Thank you.